Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Board of Directors meeting for the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. Can we get a roll call, please?
Director Austin?
Here.
Director Nichols?
Here.
Director Ray Russum?
Here. Would you please stand with me for the Pledge of Allegiance?
Ready? Begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And under agenda review, is there anyone who'd like to change the order of the agenda this evening?
No.
Seeing no objections, we'll proceed as posted. That takes us to item four, public comments on items not appearing on this agenda. Would you like to step forward and have 3 minutes to address items that are not on this agenda?
Thank you, Madam Mayor and San District members. My name is Jeff Edwards. And last night, you may know, the city of Pismo Beach met, the regular city council meeting. I don't know if any of you attended. But on the agenda for Pismo Beach was CCB, an update. And in fact, what it was, they're working towards a memorandum of agreement between all of the players in this project. It really is must-see TV. I would encourage all of you to review the tape. I both read the staff report and did watch the tape today. Now, this memorandum of agreement is only for phase one, has nothing to do with phase two, distinctively different project. The yield, for your information, of phase one is approximately 1,000 acre feet per year. According to Pismo Beach, Ben Fine, the public works director of Pismo Beach, indicated that phase two, if and when it was needed, would come online. But that's really where all of the respective cities, that's where your water comes in. So phase one is really a Pismo Beach project. And in fact, Ben Fine and Jim Lewis both mentioned that the cities of AG and Grover Beach, their city managers and public works directors, had been in on extensive discussions and negotiations. There is an outline for this MOA. It's several pages, and I would encourage you to also read that in detail. The MOA affects not just AG and Grover Beach, but also Oceano and the Sand District, for sure. There's something in it for everyone, or not, as it were. So far, Grover Beach has contributed $110,000 to the project, AG about $145,000. The Sand District's the big contributor at $367,000, 54% of the project so far. Pismo's limited their percentage to 20%, though they have advanced some monies, and they want that money back at some point, plus interest. They voted on that last night. One of the points of discussion was relative to Oceano, and basically, as you know, they intend to inject this treated water down along the shoreline. Well, they want Oceano to be limited to their current extractions, which are anywhere between 150 to 200 acre feet per year, when their entitlement's 900 acre feet. So in essence, Pismo Beach wants to manage Oceano's water away from them, in large part because they're not participating. But really, for the cities of Grover and AG, there's nothing in it for you guys either. And certainly not the Sand District. Part of this agreement requires the sanitation district to pick up all expenses, and I'll summarize.
Please.
Pick up all expenses between phase one and phase two. So this is an open checkbook, not only for the cities, but also for the Sand District.
Thank you very much.
I think it's time for Pismo Beach to take this on their own.
Thank you.
Good evening, I'm Julie Tacker, and Mr. Edwards' comments, he opened by saying CCB, and I just want to clarify for everyone at home and here that CCB translates to Central Coast Blue. That is the Central Coast Blue Recycled Water Project, and just because I saw some question marks on some faces in the room, they weren't quite clear on what he was talking about. So do watch the tape and read the staff report, and then take care of your interests, Oceano, Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach. They want your money, and they want your water.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to come forward? Item's not on tonight's agenda. Seeing no one, I'll close public comment and bring it back to us to move on to item 5. This is the consent agenda. We have 5A, the approval of warrants, and 5B, the approval of the meeting minutes for November 6, 2019. Anyone have questions for staff?
Not I.
I'm good.
Nor do I. So would anyone like to make a motion?
I'll move that we approve the warrants and the minutes of the meeting of November 6, 2019.
I abstain on the basis that I had not read the meeting minutes.
Okay, then I will second that motion, and we will have a roll call, please. Yes, sir. Oh, absolutely. Sorry. Would anyone like to comment on items 5A or 5B? Okay, seeing no one, I'll close public comment. Thank you so much. We do have a motion and a second on the floor, and I guess we don't need a roll call. All in favor?
Aye.
And wait, you're not an aye, right?
That's right.
Any abstentions?
Yeah.
So we have two ayes and an abstention. That takes us to item 6. 6A is the redundancy project NEPA environmental update. Administrator Gent, it's all yours, sir.
Good evening, Jeremy Gent, District Administrator. And so this evening, the item before you is an update on the redundancy project in regards to our efforts in securing USDA funding and complying with the National Environmental Policy Act. Through this process, one of the hurdles that we had to accomplish was a consultation with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And through that consultation, the path going forward initially was based on an informal consultation. And so that's a consultation that takes about 30 days to get through with the U.S. Department of Fish and Wildlife. And that would be based on we not having any impacts to endangered species. U.S. Fish and Wildlife agreed with the findings in our biological evaluation with one notable exception, the findings made on the California red-legged frog. And so they've taken issue with the avoidance measures that were proposed and the fact that, or the claim that we would not have an adverse impact on the frog during the construction of the project. Myself and our outside help, MKN, sat in on a phone call along with our environmental consultant with U.S. Department of Fish and Wildlife, and we talked about opportunities to avoid having to go through a formal consultation because of the delay to the project, adding over 75 days, over 2.5 months to the project. We couldn't get past, they wanted us to not work during wet weather, and so there would be 4 months, not just when it's actively raining, but the actual wet season. And so we're stalled at that point, not being able to get their concurrence, and their concurrence is necessary to achieve USDA funding. So the U.S. Department of Agriculture will not provide the funding if U.S. Fish and Wildlife has not agreed to the environmental findings. So that brings us back to going through a formal process. So if we investigate that, we have a delay to the project. We also have minor increased costs and just getting through the additional evaluation, but those are extremely minor, those costs. The real costs are in the delay itself, the time value of money. And I do have a little bit of information here on kind of what that, and I'll move into that as I go through this. So at this point, staff and the project team's recommendation is to move forward with the formal consultation. And that decision is largely based on the fact that if we don't get the coverage now and the frog were to enter the site, during construction, we could we would have delays during an active construction, and that we would be exposing the district to potential construction delay claims from the contractor. So if he can't work and it's not his fault, that would be the responsibility of the district to keep some portion of his payroll complete through a claim process. So that's really the risk we're trying to avoid if we were to have a frog enter and not have this take coverage. We would be subject to potentially further delays and further financial expenditures on the district's part. So now, if we look at what would it take to move off of the USDA funding? So we did sit down with the environmental group, and so, there is a biologist from Rincon that's our consultant for the project is here tonight and is willing to answer any questions. So if your board has questions, and along with Eileen Shields with Mike Nunley and Associates to answer any specific questions that you might have about this. But so when we look at the evaluation, is there still value in pursuing the USDA funding? So if we moved off USDA funding right now, we would potentially realize just under $300,000 in initial savings to the project by not having to go through the USDA process.
When you say move off, can you tell me what that means?
So if we were to abandon pursuing U.S. Department of Agriculture funding and say we're going to fund this project solely with district reserves and municipal bonds, and we would abandon the federal money, and so we would get a truncated process that would allow us to move forward at risk without having to satisfy U.S. Fish and Wildlife. And
you
so
said
we've,
that savings number was how much? I'm sorry.
It's roughly $290,000. So it's about $15,000 in continuing to complete the application, $75,000 in reporting and audits of having the money after the fact that we would have to do for USDA. There's a lot of things that have to be reported to them monthly during the project. And then the delay is approximately, the time value of money delay of adding the extra months into the project is approximately $200,000 in additional cost. So that's what generates the $290,000. So then if we go and look at the potential cost savings of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, that's based on a 2.8% interest loan for a 40-year term. The district will realize $800,000 in savings over the course of the loan itself. And I do want to circle back around to the risk component and why staff is recommending moving forward with the delay and getting the formal consultation completed with U.S. Fish and Wildlife is really that risk during construction. Even if we move off, we could advance the project, but if we moved off of the USDA funding and abandoned that and funded it ourselves, if we were to encounter a frog during the project, we would still have to be compliant with the Endangered Species Act, and we would have no ability at that point to relocate the frog, and we would have no connection to a federal agency to expedite that process because there would be no federal funding on the project. And that's a nuance. When you have federal funding on a project, you have what's called Section 7 consultation with those other federal agencies. And you get stuff done in months rather than years, and that's not an exaggeration. So if we had to get a take permit with no federal funding, it would be a major impact to the project. And so with that, staff is recommending that the project continue to engage with U.S. Department of Fish and Wildlife and obtain the necessary take permit as they're recommending. And that concludes my staff report. And as I said, there's some other folks here that are willing to help elaborate my answers.
Thank you. Do we have questions for staff? Barbara?
I'm concerned about the item here that in the studies, there were no red-legged frogs. So why are we being forced into this situation?
Yeah, so that was an initial take I took. Like, why are we just finding out about this now? How did we end up on this path where we didn't identify this risk? And it's not fair to characterize it as not being identified. The opinion remains that it's a low risk to the frog. The surveys were done. No frogs identified on site. No habitat on site. U.S. Fish and Wildlife's concern is that there are frogs in Meadow Lagoon, which is adjacent to the property, and Arroyo Grande Creek, which is adjacent to the property. And during wet weather, male frogs are known to travel far distances to mate, and so they could move through the property. And the risk to the frog is really trapping it on the property and not being able to relocate it, and because you can't even pick up a frog and move it off-site without a permit. So we're not talking about killing frogs. We're not talking about taking away habitat. We're talking about official term is harassing a frog, and that's considered a take under the Endangered Species Act, and that would be a violation, and it could face fines or even criminal penalties if that were to happen. So based on the biologist's recommendation, we have no habitat, no frogs found during protocol surveys, an existing operating facility that's not a green field. One of the things U.S. Fish and Wildlife brought up was the Morro Bay Wastewater Project on the conference call. It was a similar impact and a similar finding by U.S. Fish and Wildlife on specifically the California red-legged frog. And through that discussion, they're seeking to remain consistent because they work in a region. And so they want to make their determinations, consistently throughout. We did advocate the differences in our project, being that it's an operating facility, already disturbed site. Their biologist was not agreeable to any of those positions. He did advocate that he would be able to advance this inside the 135 days, but I can't really put that into the schedule because that's a staff level commitment, and they do have impacts. If he did bring up that if the Department of Justice had a project and they just clear their plate and work on the DOJ stuff, so that could be an impact that would delay it, their findings. But they would still meet the 135 because they're obligated to do so.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
No.
Just
I can feel your blood boiling right next to me.
So what exactly is the formal consultation? What does that consist of, a formal consultation?
So, Doug, would you like to answer? I mean, can you come up to the podium, please?
Hi, my name is Doug Drynan, and I'm with Rincon Consultants. Yeah, the formal pathway is just when you kind of reach that next level where you think there's likely to be some effect, and where then it starts the clock ticking. And under the Section 7 process, right, when you have a federal nexus, that request is by that other federal agency. And so in this case, the USDA would submit that starts the clock going. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service did say that the existing report that we had already drafted would suffice with additional kind of proposed measures that would extend, into operations and maintenance, some minimum best management practices that would also give coverage for the life of the project. And then that would start that process. And that's where they have the deadline to issue a biological opinion. And if you don't have that federal nexus, if you have to go the Section 10 route, which is a habitat conservation plan, there is no deadline on a response for that coverage.
But I still don't understand what an actual, what do they do? Do they go out to the site and look for what?
No.
Actual or just all paperwork?
It's pretty much paperwork. They use, if the existing report suffices, and there was no indication, he indicated otherwise, that they're just drafting a biological opinion.
So I'll try to elaborate a little bit. So the U.S. Fish and Wildlife biologists, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service will issue a biological opinion and also issue what a likely take amount would be on the project, right? They would say permission to relocate 25 frogs during the course of the project. If you need more than that, then you're outside of your take coverage. So that's the process that they would be going through now. So the formal term is they're going to write a biological opinion, and that's meant to identify the amount of frogs we might likely encounter during the construction process.
It's really upsetting because, like you said, we determined there was no frogs, no habitat, and just because of the closeness to the lagoon, which is... I mean, there's no frogs on the sewer plant site. They don't.
Well, and a little bit of clarification on that, there's no aquatic habitat on the site, but I mean, frogs in general, and in this species in particular, are known, you know, males, females as well, not as much as males, but can disperse overland and upland habitats. And so even, you know, weedy fields or landscaping areas, I mean, frogs are known to traverse mm-hmm. if there are other sources of water in the area. And in this case, you know, there are, you know, several kind of, you know, sources of water that they could potentially move. And there are those known occurrences, mm-hmm. you know, along Aranda Creek and in the lagoon.
And the thing, because of Morro Bay, they want to stay consistent. I think that's a terrible thing to do. You know, because it's like there's two different places, two different projects. So how can they say, well, because we did it here, I don't know. So what if you were explaining about if we forego the USDA funding, what were the ramifications again?
So we don't avoid the risk of not having the take coverage.
We still will have to... Who would be regulating the red-legged frog? Then whoever we got money, or they would go with our biological report?
Right. So at that point, our CEQA determination, our California determination would be adequate to move us into construction, but we would still not have coverage if, like I said, if a frog were to enter the site. There's a little bit of a concern that we've identified this. U.S. Fish and Wildlife has identified this now. Had we moved forward with best information and no contradictory opinion, it would have been something that I could have recommended. Now that we have a conflicting opinion from another biologist, moving forward at risk seems like it's not something that I can recommend, because we're well informed, we're too well informed at this point to move forward with that. And to stop a contractor during construction is a bigger impact than delaying the project before construction.
So then if we did the formal consultation, it's 135 days or less?
Correct.
And that's what you're recommending?
Yes.
We do? Okay, that's all my questions.
Thank you. I want to thank you for preparing all that financial stuff that I asked you for, so I appreciate that. But I do have one more kind of missing piece that I need to fill in, so hopefully you can ballpark it for me.
Okay.
You know, in terms of the real question is, do we weigh a cost savings and risk, or do we weigh, you know, how much we're, I'm sorry, initial cost savings and risk, or do we take the savings that we going with USDA going forward plus the delay with the USDA? The one piece I'm missing there is, if we were to move forward at risk and we save the roughly $290,000 and not taking that delay, and let's assume the worst case scenario, because that's best planning from us, is assuming we do run into a frog. and it's and we have to shut down for the rainy season, and we have to compensate the contractor during that time. What's the likely outlay for that?
It's hard. I wanted to try to figure out that number. It was a short time period to try to figure out what that might be. And the main problem with trying to determine that, it's going to be based on the contractor's claim. He's going to advocate for, you know, different dollar amounts. And so it would be a back and forth process where they're going to say they want these damages, and we would be say, no, it's really only these damages. So with that, I mean,
are we talking about $100,000 a month? Are we talking about tens of thousands? What are we talking about?
I would think that magnitude, hundreds of thousands, in the $100,000 a month. And that's just a complete guess. If you want a better number, I can reach out to some agencies that have experienced these type of shutdowns, and that's what I would have done to come up with that number. Is hey, what type of damages are you seeing for a major delay on a project?
So you're again kind of spitballing this, because you know all we're doing is looking into a crystal ball right now. We could maybe conservatively say a six-figure number, and best-case scenario, maybe a five-figure number.
Correct. Yes.
Somewhere 50 to 100, maybe worse.
Yes.
Does that sound about right? Okay. Just making sure I can kind of conceptualize the whole risk versus reward, basically, scenario financially.
And that would likely be for that month, and then
for those four months,
right. And then potentially even the following year, assuming depending on when we encountered it during construction.
Oh,
right?
So if we encounter it 1 year, then we have to assume we're going to encounter it the following year.
Yeah, I'm certain we would have to shut down for the wet weather had we encountered a frog moving forward.
So it would be safest for us to assume an 8 month total parking that.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. That concludes my questions. Any others? Then let's go ahead to open up this up to public comment. Come on up.
Thank you, directors. Again, Jeff Edwards. To be clear, if you wish to proceed with the redundancy project, you have to get an incidental take permit. To proceed without coverage, it's insanity, frankly. If you choose not to pursue the USDA loan, then you're in Section 10 of the Endangered Species Act, and indeed you're into multiple years. In Los Osos, we started a habitat conservation plan under Section 10 of the Endangered Species Act in 2004, and it was just published in the Federal Register in October of this year. So Section 10 is not a place you want to go, again, if you wish to proceed at this location. Frankly, the red-legged frog, its presence, and now its involvement in your redundancy project, I think the sewer gods have spoken. This site is not a good site for your redundancy project. Scrap it. It's already over $40 million. And if you have delays, delays will be in the millions of dollars, not hundreds of thousands. So I think it's a time to really reflect. Think in terms of 40 to 50 years, not 5 to 10. That's your job. You're at a tipping point right now. You have a great opportunity to move this facility, brand new facility, outside of a tsunami run-up area, outside of the confluence of two creeks, no high groundwater. If you move it, to Grover Beach. That's where this facility needs to go, between 4th and 13th on Highland. This is an opportunity. When are you going to, how much are you going to invest before you decide this is just too much, we have to push away from this project? I think it's imperative that you have that discussion. Ask your staff to update the MKN alternatives analysis that was done some time ago. Put numbers to compare. Unless you do a apples-to-apples comparison to keeping the site where it is, the treatment site where it is, or moving it, you haven't done your ratepayers a service. I'd encourage you to do that. Thanks.
Thank you.
Good evening, Julie Tacker. I didn't like that characterization either, Linda, where the U.S. Fish and Wildlife wants to be on par for the region. I don't have the words in front of me. But I'll tell you, Morro Bay's project in that location is far less likely to see a red-legged frog than you are. Linda, aren't
If you could address us as one body, I would appreciate that. Thank you very much.
My mistake.
I was just saying I know.
As you know, as maybe you all know, Ms. Austin served on the Zone 11A during the Flapgate and Meadow Creek and Lagoon studies after the flood of 2010. Those studies found red-legged frog very near the sewer plant site. Maybe in my youth, today I could still throw a ball to how far the frog was from your front door. It was under the little bridge that the sanitation district put on the county's property and then removed a few years ago. So it was found right there. So where are they that they haven't been found? They're all around there. Any water course, a little drainage ditch, it's a wastewater treatment plant. There's water all the time there, always. So it's very likely that you could come across it. My concern is, how on earth did we get this far with your consultants not either knowing about those studies and knowing that this potential was there? Mr. Rickenbach a few years ago was your biologist, and now Rincon Consultants is your biologist, and here we are this at the 11th hour, and now you're having to do this. How much more is it going to cost for Rincon to go through this process for you? I didn't see that calculation in here. Maybe I missed it. And where's their responsibility in this? If you had gone with State Revolving Fund, you would have had to have gone through this process. And we knew that a couple years ago when State Revolving Fund was the path that you wanted to take. So I'm sort of angry that we got this far. I wasn't watching it close enough to say warn you, but that's certainly not my job. Mr. Trujillo's been here for quite a while, and maybe he doesn't have that biological background or the permitting process, but I think they have red-legged frogs in Santa Maria. And maybe he should have known. I just feel like somebody should have put this forth sooner, and that this is so late in the game. So I'm really sorry for you, but I think you do have to go with your staff's recommendation.
Thank you. Wow, perfect timing. You're practiced. Anyone else like to come forward? Okay, Director Gent, I do that all the time, don't I? There's a couple questions that came up in the public comments, so maybe going in backwards order. How did we miss this, and where's the culpability, if any?
So from my perspective, I wouldn't characterize it as a miss. I would characterize it as a best interpretation, an interpretation that has been made in the past by biologists and has been granted by U.S. Fish and Wildlife. So the approach was avoidance, that we would avoid the frogs based on the other findings where they weren't encountered on the site during protocol surveys, which is what you would typically do to identify endangered species, whether you were going to encounter them or not. None found on site. We would do stuff to avoid them. We would monitor for them. All that language was included as part of the informal consultation on what we would do to not impact an endangered species. So what we're talking about here is we had programmed in 30 days for an informal process. Yes, we knew we had to go through this process, multiple endangered species. Here's how we're going to handle all these endangered species that exist on the biologically diverse Central Coast. And as I said earlier, all the other findings were agreed to by U.S. Fish and Wildlife. They've taken issue with a particular species. Their opinion seems valid to me as an engineer, not as a biologist. What they are saying makes sense. And so from that standpoint, I think what we have is a biologist at Rincon that has made these recommendations before with success, and now we have maybe a stricter interpretation about what can be avoided and what cannot be avoided during construction.
Thank you. And going again in reverse order, we've had this conversation over and over again, but maybe just a quick recap of why are we doing this and why are we doing this now?
So I'll start off by saying I actually agree with most of what Mr. Edwards said as far as where the plant should be located, that there we are likely to encounter frogs because they've been found down there on sites. I don't disagree with any of that. I think the disconnect is the value in the existing facility. There's over $100 million in existing infrastructure at that site. And so that's why I would continue to recommend to make this investment in the redundancy project. Like, it is a compromised site, tsunami inundation zone, as was pointed out by the speaker, but the investment's already been made. So we don't have to retreat at this point. And so it makes sense if you just look at the math of, do you want to stop a $30 million project and pursue a $120 million project off-site? The other point being, during that time, we would not achieve redundancy. We would continue to be working, operating that facility without redundant treatment processes. So that's the risk to the environment if we, while we're waiting to relocate off-site, which realistically, even in just 5 to 10 years, could be held up in other ways trying to find sites. If, and this is something that I've considered. This was talked about when I came, redundancy was already moving along. Does it make sense to move off-site? And the decision is no. We can invest $30 million now and maintain that site for 10, 20, 30 years, most likely, and then at that point, we will have developed a master plan that will have us relocating, retreating inland, and could potentially be in an area, the area described in Grover Beach is a good area because it's low-lying and close to the existing facility, so it would be minimal infrastructure to get the piping over there, but you're still constructing a brand new wastewater treatment plant while the community has already invested in one that still has usable life left in it.
Thank you very much. Okay, well, let's bring that back to us for some commentary and points of view. Director Austin?
Well, I think I agree with our staff and that we need to take the staff's recommendation and pursue it.
Okay.
At the risk of seeming anti-environmentalist, I think it's really sad that government regulations on issues like this create such a huge cost for companies and services that are necessary to the community. But it is what it is, and I think Jeremy's got the right idea. I don't know about having it in Grover, but I'm sure we could make accommodations.
I appreciate and concur with what was just said in that, you know, again, not being dissensitive or insensitive to the environmental movement, but when there's such a disconnect between the state level and local level government that I feel like I pound my head against that wall all the time, whether it's this or RENA numbers and housing or whatever else. There's just a lack of cohesion and vision that has the eye on the service to the people, and that's very frustrating. But that being said, thank you very much for the financial analysis. I think it's pretty clear that we have to move forward in the way that staff is describing. So would anyone like to make a motion to do so?
I'll make a motion that we go with the staff recommendation and pursue the USDA funding and comply with the federal environmental requirements.
I second.
We have a motion and a second on this. I think we should have a roll call, please.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Nichols?
Yes.
Director Ray Russom?
Yes. That takes us to item 6B. This is the consideration of conflict waiver for the law firm of Carmel and Nakasha. Mr. Trujillo.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good evening, board members. You have in front of you tonight for your consideration a conflict of interest waiver for the law firm of Carmel and Nakasha. I have been asked by Carmel and Nakasha to provide assistance to the city attorney on an interim limited basis because of staffing issues. I'm willing to assist, but I'm prevented from doing so because of conflict of interest laws unless the waiver is obtained. Both entities, the City of Arroyo Grande and the Sand District, must both agree to a waiver in order for the conflict to be waived. Conflict of interest rules require informed written consent of both entities. Informed written consent means disclosing all relevant circumstances and the material risks, including actual and reasonably foreseeable consequences arising out of potential or actual conflicts of interest. The main conflict of interest, which we have identified as Central Close Blue, that presents an actual and reasonably foreseeable conflict because of the differing interest of the City of Arroyo Grande as a water purveyor and the sanitation district, which does not have those water interests. I will, if the waiver is approved, I will continue to represent the district in the Central Close Blue negotiations, and Carmel and Nakasha will represent the City of Arroyo Grande. The attorneys in the firm, essentially myself and the city attorney, would essentially build an ethical wall between us so that we would not share any information that we would learn in confidence from each of our respective clients. Now, while it's unlikely, it is possible we may learn of confidential information just by the fact that we're providing legal services to the city of Arroyo Grande. That is one of the additional risks. We are confident that we can effectively represent both entities and the interest of both in these circumstances. We are not aware of any other potential conflicts of interest. It's always difficult to predict what future controversies could arise between the city and the Sand District. Litigation is highly unlikely, but then it's always a possibility. If the entities were to be litigate against each other, both entities would have to retain separate legal counsel. That would be one of the consequences.
If you would, it's difficult to concentrate. Thank you very much. Go ahead.
So that concludes my staff report. I am certainly available to answer any questions, and I also believe that we've received a letter for the record.
Oh, yes. I'll wait until you open public comment. We received public comment from a member of the community that couldn't be here tonight and asked us to include that in the record.
Okay, why don't you go ahead? I'm not going to open public comment yet because we haven't had questions answered, but okay. You might as well go ahead and let us know what's been received.
Okay, so we
is
received...
Is your mic on? Okay.
Earlier this evening, we received from Patricia Price in Arroyo Grande, Dear Board, I'm not in favor of granting the waiver. The perception of conflict of interest is apparent, and the district has had less than a stellar record in that regard. The lawyer in question needs to make other arrangements. The staff report says in black and white that there is a conflict of interest. Sorry, I can't make the meeting tonight.
Thank you very much. Questions of staff?
I have no questions. I have one comment, which is I did call the Grover Beach city attorney today to see if this situation would have any impact whatsoever on the relationship between Grover Beach and the sanitation district or AG, and he found no problem with the issue.
Thank you. Any questions?
Well, maybe just go over everything. You're going to be working with Carmel, you said, on a limited interim basis for like just a short period to help out. What are they till they get other staff?
I believe that is their plan.
And then the only conflict would be the Central Coast Blue.
And that's the existing conflict that
the
we have identified.
Would be the Central Coast Blue, and you would be representing this district.
Yes, I would continue to represent the district.
So, like, I read all these, the 6 points, you know, I think if you were to say, like, out of an abundance of caution that we would, you know, not do it, but I think knowing Mr. Trujillo and understanding all of this, I think that we'll wait and hear what.
Thank you. I've got a couple questions. So, the alternative in here as it was worded wasn't clear to me, so I had to call our city attorney to make sure I understood. So I want to make sure that I iterate here what I heard, because so that the record is clear here. The alternative said the district may decline to waive any potential conflict of interest, in which case Carmel and Nakasha will continue to represent the city without the assistance of Mr. Trujillo, and Mr. Trujillo will continue to represent the district through its private law practice. What was unclear to me is it says Carmel and Nakasha will continue to represent the city without the assistance of Mr. Trujillo, but it would also mean you would not be of counsel to Carmel and Nakasha at all.
That's the
way it was explained to me by Tim Carmel.
On that particular item, yes.
So it would not just be
Central Coast Blue.
Just for Central Coast Blue.
Okay. That's not the way it was explained to me, so I'm confused by this alternative, because as I understand it, you talked about that wall, but that wall isn't defensible. That the wall, it's assumed the wall is, it's got Swiss cheese, let's just say. that there's no, that the law doesn't provide for that anymore, that protection anymore. And so if you were to continue here, that would preclude you from being part of Carmel and Nakasha, because you wouldn't be able to create that wall. And Carmel and Nakasha is representing the city of Aurora Grande. Okay. So I'm confused, I guess. He said, make sure that you put that out there. It sounds like there's a little bit of confusion here.
Well, the city attorney, Tim Carmel, is the managing partner. he makes the rules. He certainly, I could understand his position that if the waiver is not granted, then I should have no contact, not only with the city of Aurora Grande, but with the firm. And
okay.
I am completely 100% agreeable with that.
Okay. And then my second question is, in terms of making this determination tonight, does it have to be unanimous?
Just a majority rules, two affirmative votes.
Okay. Then I will simply say, as we go forward to public comment, that I am not going to be voting on this tonight. I'm going to abstain because I have not had the chance to hear an analysis with my counsel. So I feel that this is too big a legal decision to make on my own as I sit here. I talked to Mr. Carmel, and there was no danger in waiting. We've been thinking we were going to get that analysis since we found out that this was an issue, but we still haven't received it, so we haven't had a chance to talk about it. So that being said, I'm going to respectfully ask at the appropriate time that we continue this until Aurora Grande City Council has had a chance to weigh this. But I'm going to put that out there right now before we hear public comment, and then so that people kind of know where I'm at with this, and then we'll see where the rest of the board is. But at this time, I'd like to go ahead and open up public comment.
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker, and thank you, Patricia Price at home, for sending in your comments. I appreciate your being forthright right now. I actually question your participation at all in this matter, in that you will then also be making the decision from the Arroyo Grande standpoint, and you represent the Sand District. So that, again, is another legal question, whether or not you should be voting at both places or even hearing the item at both places. Just a question. You cannot waive the conflict of Central Coast Blue. Simply cannot be done. I'm holding a draft of the MOA right now, and it is between the NCMA agency, which is the three partners, Pismo, Grover, and Arroyo Grande, and the sanitation district. You can't serve two masters. You simply cannot. You have to maintain the arm's length. Here's the problem I have. Staff report says that you recently retired from the city of Santa Maria. In fact, you retired in December of 2018. Then it says, Trujillo joined CNN as of council after recently retiring from the city of Santa Maria. As city attorney, continues to maintain his private law practice. In fact, according to Carmel Nakasha's website, Mr. Trujillo joined that firm in 2019 in February. So you've already been working for the firm for quite some time. And I'm afraid the conflict's already arisen. It had to have, or you wouldn't be here today. You don't speak to your prior representation to the city of Santa Maria and the potential conflicts of interest that you would have in the Santa Maria groundwater basin, having represented Santa Maria, and now you're up here in the Northern Cities Management Area via Arroyo Grande. That's a conflict too. I hope Ms. Austin reconsiders her prior statement there. This is a hot potato, and I just simply do not believe you can waive the conflict. This is way too important. Central Coast Blue, as Jeff said to you earlier, and I said to you tonight, Pismo Beach is coming after each one of you, all four of you, Oceano, Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, and the Sanitation District. Somebody has to hold the line hard here at home. That was supposed to be you. And it appears you've already been in conflict for many months.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to speak?
Thank you, directors. My name is Jeff Edwards, and my suggestion is that you dispense with this matter tonight, that you not continue it, that you not conduct any analysis. With all due respect, there's no analysis that can buttress this waiver. It can't happen. So my suggestion to you tonight is hear it, decline to grant the waiver, the matter is resolved, and everybody can go about their business seeking proper representation and moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you.
And seeing that's the end of the bodies in the public who are here, anyone in the lobby? I will go ahead and close public comment. And I guess I don't know that we sort of did commentary before we got here, but I would like to make a motion that we table this until the next meeting so that the Arroyo Grande City Council can have a chance to hear on this. I realize that there's a chance for me to get outvoted here, but that seems unethical considering we're the subject of the conflict of interest.
I second that motion.
Thank you very much. Do we need a roll? I don't think we need a roll call on this, do we? Okay, on a voice vote, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And none opposed, so that motion carries. So we'll carry that forward to a date certain. That's January 15th, correct? Okay, thank you. That takes us to item six. Sorry, just a moment. That's item 6C, consideration of fiscal year 2019-20 first quarter Q1 budget adjustments and the potential adopting of the resolution authorizing these budget adjustments. Mr. Gent.
Good evening, Jeremy Gent, District Administrator. It's recommended that the board review the recommended budget adjustments before you and adopt resolution number 2019-412 authorizing the budgetary adjustments. This staff report addresses staff's recommended adjustments to the budget at the end of the first quarter. There's a few minor adjustments where we have indicated that we need additional funds. The way we're recommending, and I'll go through those, the way we're recommending funding some of those increases is we have identified that our interest revenues are coming in much higher than anticipated, and that's due to the large cash that we've developed in hand because we've been collecting fees for redundancy. Redundancy's been delayed for based on when we increased rates, so we have a lot of cash on hand, so we have additional interest revenue coming in, and that is in the amount of $72,000 higher than what we had anticipated at the adoption of the budget at the beginning of quarter one. And so out of that $72,000, we need to use about we're recommending using about $24,000 of that to adjust other line items in the budget to address either overruns or items that were missed in the initial budgeting process. So in the staff report, if we go to page 3, is where the bulk of the adjustments are listed there. So if we look at item number 1, it's an account. It's the employee uniform account. We expended 39% at the end of the first quarter. Some of that was due to an upfront expense. We hired the new operator in training. He needed uniforms, so there's an upfront expense of that. And then the ongoing month-to-month of laundering the uniforms was not included in the budget. So that was, we knew we were hiring the position. We did not budget for the uniforms on that. So we need an additional $2,200 to have adequate budget for the end of the fiscal year. If we look at item number 2, our LAFCO budget share, it says 136 expended at the end of the first quarter. It's a one-time payment. So that's done. LAFCO is the Local Agency Formation Commission, I believe is the acronym. And so they adopt budgets annually in May, and so their budget increased, and they prorate shares to all the special districts and the cities. All the cities contribute to LAFCO's budget, and all the special districts do. And so annually they set that amount. Last year, we only owed $12,838. We budgeted $14,000 for this year, but the numbers came back from LAFCO at just under $19,000. I reached out to LAFCO, got a copy of their budget to see how that transpired. Their budget went up a little bit. They base our percentage on our revenues. Our revenues went up a little bit because our rates are higher, and then there were also two districts that completely fell out of the county budget, districts that no longer exist. So everybody picked up higher portions because there's just less people paying for LAFCO's budget. The one was, and I'm drawing a blank on one of the special districts is one we all know that went away, and I'm drawing a blank on what it was. And the other one was out in Creston.
Was it Cayucas?
It was Cayucas Fire. Yes, that's correct. So that's why we are recommending adding $5,000 to that line item to pay the LAFCO portion. Professional services, we're running a little bit high at the first quarter. The bulk of that was due to charges of Jones and Meyer to the project labor agreement. So the professional services portion's a little bit higher expended. So an increase of $5,000 on that line item is being recommended. AGP video, as you know, we reduced the number of meetings that we have, and we tried to estimate the savings in the budget, and we reduced it accordingly. But it turns out we over-reduced it, and we had a special meeting, and so it added on. And so we're not saving quite as much as we thought, which we thought we were going to save about $5,500 a year, but it turns out we're only going to save about $3,000 a year, so we need an additional $2,500 to pay AGP. And then our final one of increase is our rubbish. So in 2018, we brought online a screening system that is actually pulling a lot of physical debris out of the wastewater stream.
Is this the flushable wipe issue?
This is, well, yeah, it's not the issue, but yes, it is the thing that catches the flushable wipe and why we put that in.
Mm-hmm.
So these screens are pulling all those wipes out, big bundles, piles.
I've made a big deal about this in council communications in Arroyo Grande. I hope you
fantastic,
guys are doing the same thing.
Fantastic. And so it's really, that's generating a lot more trash. I don't think anybody considered that it was actually going to increase our trash bill by being able to pool. And it's great because otherwise this stuff would have ended up in our digesters, which is it's about $600,000 for us to clean a digester. We have to shut it down. People go in and take all that stuff out of it. So keeping it out, sending it to the landfill is preferred. So, but we do need to, it's a rather significant increase of $9,300. I will note that we kind of busted that budget. We were over budget last year on that item for the same reason, because this impact did start last fiscal. And so then we have some other accounts that are a little bit high, and we're saying we're not proposing any adjustments here. The computer support, the auditing's over, but that's just because it's two payments, so that's fine. No increase expected there. Electricity is high, as we've discussed in detail earlier in the year, but we have looked at it even closer, and 32% expended at the end of first quarter about 30% is expected at the first quarter, because of the summer months we actually use more electricity in our treatment than we do in the winter months. The other accounts that were in excess of the 25% the 25% at the quarter was the ocean outfall maintenance. We had a contract to inspect our ocean outfall. That's at 42%, but that's fine. It will be within budget. That again is just a payment because it's progress, and so that item will be completed, or has been completed, and the rest of that will hit in quarter two, and there's no increase necessary for that. And then the office equipment and computers, we went out and bought some new computers at the beginning of the fiscal, so that's just front-loaded at the 47% expended at this point. So that concludes my staff report, and I'm happy to answer any questions or provide additional details.
Any questions?
No.
No, it's all perfectly...
I have only one, and it's nitpicky.
Okay.
So you said we didn't anticipate the cost of the uniform for the new person.
Yes.
Don't we have to buy them boots as well?
Yes, and so that you are correct. They did receive, and so that's part of that. That
it's in there.
It's in there. So
okay.
He did receive boots, and that's part of the $2,200.
Great. That's my only question. I will open public comment, but unless there's somebody running in from the parking lot. And I'll close public comment and bring it back to us for possible action.
Well, I'll make a motion that we adopt resolution number 2019-412 to adjust the budget per the staff recommendation.
I will second that motion.
We have a motion and a second. Since it's budget-related, let's go with a roll call, please.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Nichols?
Yes.
Director Ray Russell?
Yes. That takes us to item 6D. This is our district admin and plant operations report.
Good evening. Jeremy Gent, District Administrator. Michael Jones isn't here this evening, so I'll be giving both portions. He's off on some much-needed vacation, so he took last week and this week off. And so the report's been, the operations portion of the report has been provided by Mike Arias, our operations supervisor for this meeting. The administrator's report is short. I've got just some miscellaneous items. We talked previously about we have identified the 15 residential properties in Halcyon that had incorrectly been charged for sewer service, but they were not, they're still on septic, and so it was not an appropriate charge. And so we're in the process of issuing refunds. And so I signed those warrants today. We did receive the numbers back from NBS, which is our consultant that handles putting the items on the tax roll. And so there were 3 years that we pay those 15 property owners paid into the sewer. So it amounted to just over $15,000 in refunds to those 15 property owners. They ranged between one property had actually caught it and had it corrected last year, and it went unnoticed, and NBS corrected that without our knowledge, so they took it off the tax roll and didn't identify the larger problem. So at this point, I just want to let the members of the community, those that are watching, that those checks will be coming out. We made a full effort to try to get those checks to people before Christmas.
Yeah. Thank
was
you
our
for
intent.
That.
Yeah. So, I know. And then a couple other items. I reviewed the public improvement plans for the Arroyo Grande Bridge Street bridge replacement project, and it had no comments, but one comment to you. It looks like a fantastic project. I love what you guys decided to do with it, and looking forward to seeing how that comes out.
Thank you.
And then the other item, I received from Public Works Director Greg Ray at the City of Grover Beach a copy of the Grover Beach Sewer Master Plan, which I believe was presented last night at Grover City Council. A couple upcoming items. We have some revisions to the Kennedy Jenks contract for compliance with USDA. We have to redo some of the language up front. USDA has requested that. It's a contract that we've already entered into with Kennedy Jenks, so I'll just be bringing that back because there's language changes in the front end, and so we'll have to readopt that to be compliant. Central Coast Blue MOA, we're at the end after everybody else agrees to that. We will have that discussion at that point, so that date's still to be determined. And as I often say, I do want to come back and get some other district goals and priorities, but they're clear right now. As far as plant operations, all of our numbers were good. No violations or exceedances during the reporting period. I'll summarize some of the operations and maintenance projects. Operators cleaned all the sludge beds and prepped for the seasonal transition where we go from using our atmospheric drying beds to using our mechanical drying. So we've shut that down, and so we're all indoors now with our drying system. And then we did wet weather preparation around the plant. Staff did work orders. Some of the notable items were maintenance on the fixed film reactor, the drive unit that we always talk about, a potential source of failure. So that's something we have higher frequency. They changed the oil in that because we have identified metal building up in that oil, so we know we have to change that oil more frequently because that the bearings are failing in that drive. And then as part of our winter storm preparedness, we ran the standby emergency generator and ran the emergency standby bypass pump. Staff attended a few trainings. One was a free training by FAMCON, which was an air valve training. And then the other one, they covered wet weather safety and participated in some Special District Risk Management Association online safety training. And there were no call-outs during the reported period. And that concludes the plant operations report.
Any questions?
Nope.
Actually, the only thing, question I have is was there any Grover Beach septic tanks that had gotten a raise as well?
So I'm not aware of any other, and that's one of the things that is a little bit challenging, because it's hard to identify what you don't know. So records were used from the county to prepare these documents. Mm-hmm. And so at a previous meeting, I tried to address the full public, and I'll say it again. Let me back up. I got carried away there. No, Grover Beach, you handle the billing for Grover Beach.
Right.
Grover Beach bills are based on the water bill and being connected. So you're handling the billing of that. This was a tax roll issue of putting them on the tax roll. So only the community of Oceano was exposed to that. But I will reiterate tonight that if you're in Oceano and you're on a septic tank, check your tax bill. There's the potential that you're being charged for sewer service and not receiving it. And so we'll, gladly correct that if we were to identify it. MBS did go through the whole to try to look at it again, and they've identified no other ones, but that potential still exists. I went through this at the county on Los Osos. Those were collected on the tax rolls, and there were errors in how that was done too. And they creep in, and you just have to clean them up as they're identified.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? I have one quick one. Under upcoming items, I think we discussed several months ago about revisiting the issue of billing.
Yes, so the billing with the member communities. In a previous meeting with Chairman Lee, he's suggested with the PAVO transition that I work with wait until Will Clemens was fully on board, which I think he started this week.
Started yesterday. Yeah.
And so that was the plan going forward. We are coming up on the 4 months right now, but that effort has not been started. But that is something that I'll be taking on with Mr. Bergman and Mr. Clemens and Mr. Bronson.
Excellent. That's my only question. So that is a receive and file. So let us consider that received and filed. So that takes us then to our miscellaneous items. Any miscellaneous items this evening, sir?
I have no miscellaneous items.
Then that takes us, sorry, my thing is not cooperating with me, to board member communications. Anyone have anything to?
No.
All right, well, then I will communicate on behalf of this board that anyone still watching, then you're with us and you're part of us, and I wish you the happiest and healthiest of holidays and New Year's on behalf of the whole sanitation district. So thank you so much to everyone who sticks with us during these meetings. And I'm sure that you know, if you're still watching again, you watch, so you know we're not going to be here on January 1st. So we will, our traditional second meeting, so we'll be on January 15th for our meeting for January. So with that takes us to adjournment. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.